Welcome to Improv for the Podcast. On this week's episode, we're joined by Drew Droege, who will tell us all about his improvisational journey. We'll play a couple games and, most importantly, learn how he improvised his life. Let's hit it. Welcome to Improv for the Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Lee Evans, and today we're joined by comedian, improviser, actor, writer, Drew Droege.
Hi, Drew. Michael.
Hey, Drew.
How are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
It's you know, it's the hottest it's been in quite some time.
Grateful for it.
Yeah,
you know,
grateful
it's
for
why
it.
We moved here. So it's nice. We have like about a week of spring. We'll have maybe before it gets boiling.
So yeah, it's just back to 90 plus probably. Yeah.
Exactly.
Terrible. Now, did you experience the thunderstorm yesterday?
Yesterday, no, I didn't. I heard tell of thunder in Pasadena.
Okay.
Are you up there? Do y'all live up there?
East side of town, yeah.
Okay. I'm in Hollywood, but I didn't have anything. I just had some clouds and some wind.
Clouds and wind, you missed out, Drew.
Some influencers, you know, whatever. It's what else do you get in Hollywood?
Clouds and wind. Yeah. Influencers, there you go. Oh, man. Well, I'm glad you stayed safe, you know, LA.
It's rough out there.
It's basically tough. A natural disaster.
It really is. We're just one natural disaster around the whole thing just going away.
Yeah. That's true. Really, that's really true, though.
Yeah.
One bad earthquake and, well, I try not to think about it too much. Yeah.
Well, whatever. What can we do?
What can we do? Just keep going. Mm-hmm. Keep driving.
Mm-hmm.
Keep living.
That's right.
All right. Drew, so I want to ask, I'm looking at this sign back here and I'm wondering, what's your relationship to this old place, IFTP?
You know, I've done, I want to say I've done 4 to 6 shows, I would imagine, with IFTP, because I know and love Matt. And so I'm trying to think of how I met Matt originally. I want to say maybe through our friend Mindy Sterling, who's done a bunch of the shows as well.
Yeah.
And so I want to say that's kind of how we met years ago. And he might be, I don't know, never. But anyway, we've just been like comedy friends, and he's always been like, come to our shows. And it's always so much fun. It's always just a great, great vibe, great people to work with and great audience. And yeah, so I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I know I had the pleasure of doing a show with you back in February.
Yes.
And I just remember you had this character. It's a little fuzzy now, but you're just a mom who like smoked a lot. I think
that's usually most characters in my realm are just smoking, horrible, angry women.
And that's for me, that works. That plays. It's hilarious.
Oh my God. Thank you. Yeah.
So
it's so funny. I love playing terrible characters and teaching improv. I just try to encourage people to play the worst, play the bully that ruined your life in seventh grade. Play that awful neighbor that drives you crazy. Play that boss, play that sibling, parent, grandparent, whoever that just drives you crazy or annoys you or whatever, because it's so much fun.
Yeah,
because to exercise those demons when you get up on stage, you know, and try not to be that in life.
Yeah, it's like this is the one place you can do that.
Oh, I know, it's so great. It's so therapeutic when I discovered this form of working it out. It's like, oh, I can just like, you know, I was just telling you I had a horrible interaction. Somebody in traffic was screaming at me, so I was just trying to park my car. Put it in a scene. You know, as opposed to just holding on to that rage, you know?
Yeah, that's a character right there.
Yes.
You just take that.
Absolutely.
Guy who gets angry over small things. It's like,
yeah, I don't want you to have that thing that you're like trying to drive. You're not even trying to, I didn't even take his parking spot, but he was furious that I don't know. We have different barometers of justice.
Yeah.
I guess that's just the takeaway, you know?
That's very true.
Yeah.
His barometer is very strange. But,
very, yeah. Yes, yes. But you know what? It's his point of view. So, yeah.
There you go. We'll respect it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Drew. So before we jump into our interview, we got to play some three things.
Okay.
Now, have you played three things before?
I don't know. Okay. We'll find out if I've played it or not.
Okay. All right. So on the show, how we do it, we play three things, but it's personal. So I have three categories handpicked for you, Drew.
Okay.
And you're just going to give me three things from those categories.
Okay.
And we'll just do one right after the other.
Okay, great.
All right. It's a kind of an IFTP favorite.
I love it.
All right, here we go. These are three things. Things that are only in the Carolinas.
Oh, Calabash.
One.
Good barbecue.
Two.
And Gravy.
Three. Very nice. Very nice. Second category, Chloe Savini's favorite words.
Oh, haberdashery.
One.
Crimmed.
Two.
Botanicals.
Three. Very nice. Last category. Favorite things you've written.
Favorite things I've written. Oh, that's a great. I will say my plays.
One.
Articles for Out Magazine.
Two.
And fuck you emails to people that deserve it.
Three. These are three things.
These are three things.
Very nice, Drew. Very nice. All right. Let's circle back. Why did I ask you about the Carolinas?
Because I'm from there.
You're from there.
Yes. And I'm glad you included both of them because, I mean, I say that I'm mainly from North Carolina, but I was born in South Carolina and my mom lives in South Carolina. So I go back and forth when I go visit them, you know, once or twice a year.
Yeah. Yes.
I go back and forth.
So you have history in both states.
Yes. Yes.
But obviously I'm sure there are a lot of like cultural differences between the two.
There are actually, it's definitely a big divide. North Carolina is very diverse. It's very, a lot of universities are there. There's a lot of filming that happens there. Of course there's filming in South Carolina now too, but there's just a lot. There's Research Triangle Park. So there's a lot in North Carolina that brings a lot of people from all over the world that are there. And then South Carolina is a much smaller, much redder little you know, sibling. And there's Greenville, South Carolina, which is really great, which is the best. I love Charleston. Mm. My mom lives in this little town called Marion, which is like out of a Hallmark movie. Like a lot of, it's just, you can't believe that places like that still exist. There's no McDonald's. There's no Starbucks
true
there. There's nothing.
Town.
True small town. Which is also lovely. And it's a lot of antiques and a lot of that. So there's a lot of, it's lovely there. But then there are parts of South Carolina that you just don't want to.
Maybe not as lovely.
Visit. Not as lovely.
Yeah.
No.
Is, now forgive my geography, but OBX, that's
that
South
is
Carolina,
North Carolina. That's,
oh, North
that
Carolina.
Is okay. Outer Banks. So that is North Carolina, which is beautiful. That Wilmington and
the
whole coastline. Yeah.
Okay. My wife grew up in Virginia.
Okay.
A lot of fun memories.
Beautiful.
Of OBX.
Virginia's gorgeous. Okay. So, yeah. Sure.
That's what it's on my list of places to go.
Yeah. And it may be, I mean, that might extend it to Virginia as well. OBX. I may be. Yeah, exactly. Right. But yeah, South Carolina is Myrtle Beach and that whole area, which is also beautiful area, you know.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask the barbecue. It's known for being vinegary, right?
Yeah. Well, it depends on where in the state, but yes, there is, you know, there's a vinegary sauce that's on, like, there's Lexington barbecue that's on the eastern side of North Carolina. That is my favorite. That's what we grew up eating. We would get it. It was in these big blue containers and we would freeze it. And that would be, so in the Carolinas, when you say barbecue, you mean pork. If it's chicken or steak, you would say barbecue chicken or barbecue steak, barbecue beef. But barbecue means pork and it's, and so yes, there's the vinegary stuff, but we would sort of mix and match. We would get our Lexington barbecue, but then there was a mustard based sauce from South Carolina, from Maurice's. There was a place called Piggy Park. And Maurice's barbecue has this very kind of spicy mustard sauce that's amazing that we would put on our Lexington barbecue.
You're making me hungry, Drew.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Dinner's my after job. This.
Yes. Now, yes.
You know, I'm thinking ahead. All right. Moving on to that second category. Why did I ask you about Chloe Savini?
Oh, because for the last 22 years, I've been doing an impression of Chloe Savini. I looked in a mirror one time back then. And realized that I looked like her. And I will say, as we progress through this thing called life, she and I continue to look more and more like each other. I read an article with her and I was fascinated by the world that she's in. And I sort of created something that I did on stage. I did it in sketch groups. And even before I was performing at the Groundlings, like when I was in classes at the Groundlings, I was doing these sketch shows and I was doing Chloe. Then, and I did in my final sort of class show at the Groundlings before you're voted into the Sunday Company, I did Chloe in that show. And so Chloe has been part of my arsenal for a very long time. And I started making videos with my friend Jim Hansen, probably around 2008. I want to say something like that. Maybe I'm very cloudy on that, but something around that time. And I've been doing these videos since that. I haven't done a formal one with him in a while. But I am, every now and then I have to put on the wig and do it and make appearance and, you know, play Chloe. I just was always fascinated by, I feel like because like growing up in small town North Carolina, I would always read about New York and LA and like these really hyper specific worlds of fashion and film, independent film, and really smart culture makers. And I felt so like I could tell you about barbecue, but I don't, you know, I was like, I'm fascinated by that world. And so she represented all of that to me, and it was sort of like an entree into that. And what's been so wild and fascinating is that it's sort of given me an entree into that. And a lot of people that I have met that way, and I get it, I've got invited to these things, and people think I know all about Louboutin or, you know, Ermengelda Zegna or whoever the hell. And I'm like, I know the names, but I really don't follow it. And, but hey, everybody's a nerd about something. And I think all characters are nerds about something. So it's good to be a nerd about fashion if that's your thing, you know, or barbecue, whatever.
Yeah.
Be a nerd.
Why not both?
Yeah. Why not both?
And I think, I think barbecue is way more interesting than fashion.
I agree.
Just going to put it out there.
You can't eat your suit.
You cannot.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's enough. That's all you need to say about that.
Exactly. Right.
Thank you for sharing. I did watch a number of those Chloe videos. I loved them.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for watching.
The toast video.
That was a hit. That was a really fun one. Also, that helps with our friend Gia, Jen Diem. They did a song called Amazing. Which is plays underneath that Chloe song. And so, yeah. So
that was about the hair, I think.
Yeah. They're called High Fashion is the name of the band. And that's, I think it helps that video so much. Cause you hear that song, you're like, this song is amazing. So literally.
I love it. I have to throw in one more thing. You said haberdashery. Was it, those don't exist anymore, do they?
I know. You know what? Haberdashery is one of those words that you hear in improv a lot. Like people use it a lot, like salve. People love to say that word in improv. It's a funny words, but you never use them in real life. And you don't even know.
Absolutely
not. So haberdashery is a hat store, I believe.
Yes.
Okay. Like I mean, it's also a word that I kind of know, but so like what's a milliner? That's a hat.
Yeah, that is another one.
Hat. Okay. And I only know that because of like, Hello, Dolly.
That's why I know it.
Okay, okay, great. Because there's Maddie Faye is a milliner, and it's like, or Minnie Faye is a milliner, and it's like, you know,
That's
all these jobs that now have been replaced with
machines. Yeah,
I know.
That's about it.
That's one thing that, as poor as we will be as improvisers, we can't be replaced by AI.
That's true.
We just can't.
Yeah,
they'll try, but you can't. Yeah. So.
There's a comfort in that.
There is a comfort in that, in our poverty and obscurity.
I don't know that AI, it's really just pulling information that already exists. It's never an original
thought. Right, exactly.
And
right.
Thank God for that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. That last category, Drew, I asked you about favorite things you've written. So I know you mentioned plays. Could you just talk about maybe one or two of those that you've
Sure. I only have really three that I've done. Well, I wrote solo shows for a while, and then I considered the last two that I've done to be more plays because I play characters in them. So one that I wrote was called Bright Colors and Bold Patterns, and it was all about marriage equality. And it was now that gay people are allowed to be married and legally, you know, honored, you know, with marriages, we immediately feel this pressure to get married. And do we want that? Should we want that? And so I wrote that based on an invitation that I got to my dear friend's wedding when they asked the guests not to wear bright colors and bold patterns. And I put that in context of like, what if that was in a gay wedding and what are we scrubbing from, what are we losing in our brightness and our boldness in order to fit in with mainstream society? So that all happened before a wedding in Palm Springs. So then I was like, oh, I should write another one that happens during a gay event. So I wrote a play called Happy Birthday, Doug, all about the anxiety that happens at a birthday party in Los Angeles and how I played 9 gay men at a party talking to Doug. And so that was what that was. And then I was like, all right, I've written a before play in Palm Springs and I did a during play in LA. So I need to do after. So I always said, I need to write a play that's after a funeral. But I just was like, I do have lots of connections to funerals and stuff, but not in terms of like gay culture. And I was like, I feel like I want to write about that, but I don't. So I was like, during COVID, I was reacquainted with the Hitchcock movie Rope. And I was like fascinated by it. And I was like, I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And I was like, oh, what if I did a murder? And so my new play that I've written is called Messy White Gaze. And it's all about a, it opens with two guys who are in a throuple and they're killing their third. Mm-hmm. And there's a dead body in the room and all these people come over for brunch. Wow. So it's a metaphor for kind of like how, what we do to each other. Also, all the characters are white and I wanted to write about race and our problematic situation that we're in as a country. And the only way I knew to really enter that conversation is to just sort of like, is to really, you know, critique the culture that I'm in. And so I was like, you know, gay white men have a lot of problems when it comes to feeling othered and feeling like they understand what it is like to be a BIPOC or a woman or a trans person. We love to go, oh, I understand because I'm gay. And it's like, well, maybe what if we don't understand? And what if we need to shut up? So I wanted to write a play about kind of monsters in our way. That's hopefully funny. So I'm working on that and I'm doing readings of that and trying to make that happen. But yeah, I've loved writing my own material. I've had to write my own stuff because the phone wasn't always ringing and doesn't always ring still for me. And so in terms of getting work, and it's a really nice calling card and just as a reminder of what we're here to do. And when you write your own material, it's when you're at your strongest and at your best. And also writing these things, I wasn't on a deadline. No one was paying me to write them. Nobody was telling me, giving me notes, this and that. I just got to write from my own truth and my heart and what made me, you know, what made me laugh and what made me upset. And all of that was interesting to me. So, I'm very, it's exhausting and I hate it when I have to write. It's almost like having to clean my room, but I feel so satisfied. Even when I just go down and do a quick little rewrite or work on a tiny little thing, I feel very, rewarded by it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Man, yeah. I want to see all of those.
Oh my God, please. Yeah. One day I, when I'm really ambitious, I'll do them all in like in rep, you know, but oof, we'll see. A lot of work.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think too, just with how you described your writing and like your motives behind it, I think that's the purest form of the writing process. You're just doing it because you want to write it,
right?
You know, without the pressures and distractions and expectations, which I think some of the best work can come from that.
Oh yeah. And when, you know, it's great when you're writing for hire and someone's paying you anything, but then they own you in that sense and they're giving you notes and they're saying this and that, or you have to write stuff that you really don't care about that much. And you have to really, you know, trick your brain into caring about it. And, it's a lot of energy to write. I think writing and directing take a lot more energy for me than performing, than acting. I've always said I can act in something that I think is okay and we'll see what we can do, but I have to love it if I'm writing or directing it. You have to, because it just takes so much out of you to do it otherwise. So, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. And I know, I mean, maybe we can plug it, but I know you have a reading for your play coming up next month.
I do, in New York. Right. If you're in New York, April 7th, 8th, 9th at the Soho Playhouse, messywhitegaze.com, and check it out.
Yeah. Very exciting.
Yeah. Very exciting. We're doing just readings now, hopefully to get the word out. So hopefully there'll be production definitely later.
All right. Something to keep an eye on.
Yes.
And hopefully something in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yes, exactly. I know. Hopefully. Yeah.
Because I'm lazy.
No, don't get on a plane to come to this for a reading. Oh, come on, Michael. Don't do it.
All right. Well, thank you, Drew, for sharing.
Yeah, of course.
So we got to talk about some improv.
Oh, let's do it.
That's why we're here.
Yes.
So, Drew, I want you to think back to the first time in your life that maybe you learned about, saw, someone told you, they were like, hey, improv. Like, just whenever that first time was, you learned about it.
Yes.
Or saw it or did it.
I think probably the first time I learned about it was probably when I saw Whose Line on TV. I mean, I remember when that came on TV, and it was pure magic to me. I thought those people were phenomenal. And how do they do that? And when I look at magic, it's like, I thought like, oh, they're tricks and what is this? And the very first time I ever got to do it, I remember, when I was in high school, there was this summer program called Governor's School, and it was like a pre-college 6-week thing. And I went to college to be an English major. And so English was my like concentration. So I didn't do the plays there, but there was a night, like a talent show, or like anybody can just get up and do improv. Ooh. And I got up and I had no idea what I was doing. And I remember grabbing props. I remember I grabbed a garden hose at one point. I don't remember what, but that's all I remember. But when you don't know the rules and you're not scared enough to care, like you're just like, you just think, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. I love this. I love doing it. I'm sure I was terrible because I just was just up there just steamrolling and just
garden hose going crazy. Who knows?
With a garden hose. Who knows? So yeah, that was the first time I ever did it. I remember it would have been the summer right before my senior year in high school. Mm. And then in college, I ended up being a theater major, but we didn't have improv in our college at all. So I had never did it in college. And then I had read about the Groundlings and I was sort of debating whether do I move to New York, do I move to LA? And I had friends both places, but I came out to LA and I saw a couple shows. And I remember going into the lobby and seeing a bunch of pictures of comedians that I just admired so much. And I had just seen this movie called Go. Do you know that movie with Sarah Pauly and Tim Oliphant and all these people?
Timothy Oliphant.
It's a great Doug Liman movie. It's a fantastic movie. And there's a scene with this one person who has like maybe three lines. And I thought she was the funniest person I had ever seen. And I was like, I love her. I want to be able to do what she does. Just say three. And I went into the Groundlings and I saw her picture on the wall in the Sunday Company. And her name was Melissa McCarthy.
Oh.
And I was like, I want to do that. Yeah, and so early career. It was, I think, maybe her first movie. And I was inspired at that. And then I first came out and saw a show and I saw people like Jennifer Coolidge and Will Forte. And I saw these people who blew my brain apart that I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. So I was very scared then because I was old enough to know and be scared in a boot town. So I took, I signed up for classes and it took me forever to get through the program. I had to repeat a lot of classes. But it ended up being this wonderful place that I kind of come back to. And I had kind of a perfect, well, nothing's perfect, but I had a very, in looking back, I got to do, I get to go through the whole program and I did the Sunday Company for a year and a half and I was not put into the main company. And it was such a blessing in disguise for me because at the time I was such a joiner and I was so at every show and I was so like, oh, Captain Groundling student. And I would have made it my entire life had I become a groundling. I admire people who get into the main company and immediately diversify. It's very hard because you spend years at the school. And then if you get selected to be in the company, you feel an obligation and you feel like I've put so much of my life in this. This is my identity. And I was very bummed when I wasn't picked and it sucked being told like, you're not, you're done. However, I was in a lucky position that I got a few months later, I was being asked to come back and do shows. And then I got asked to come and teach. And so because I was teaching there, I was able to not wait tables and cater. And I was like doing something creative that I loved and I still teach there. So I've been teaching there for 18 years off and on. Yeah. Now I only teach about one or two classes a year, but I love going back there to teach and having a connection there. It also just keeps me involved there. So when I run into people, they go, hey, come do the show this weekend. So I still get to pop in and my face is still there. So I get to still do the improv shows, but I don't have to vote on people. I don't have to tell people, I don't have to go behind a closed. I can't imagine how hard it is for people in that company to have to make decisions and it's creative stuff. And you're like, everyone's good at a certain level. And so I never wanted to do that. I was given a great platform. I met so many great people and then I was let go and it made me go to UCB. It made me go do a lot of underground shows. I did shows anywhere that would have me. And I started making videos. I started making the Chloe videos with my friend Jim. I started doing other comedy videos and I just sort of made friends with everybody in town. And that really helped a lot. And also I saw people ahead of me at the Groundlings not be very lovely about receiving their news that they weren't going to move forward. And I saw what not to do in a way. And I was sort of like, don't do that. And, you learn a lot from watching, we're very emotional people, artists that we are. But also to be like, hey, move on. And, I still have a nice relationship with that theater without having to, you know, vote on people and, you know, all the other, you know, the yucky part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds ideal.
Honestly. Yeah, it really is. It really is.
You can still
yeah.
dip your toe in. You can perform, you can teach. But like you said, the stress of, oh man, I can't imagine being one of those folks who has to make those decisions. Like you're in, you're out. Oh,
right.
Gosh.
And you can like be such a fan of someone and like till you're blue in the face and go to bat for them. And still the company votes one way. And mm-hmm. you're just like, oh man, I really tried for somebody that I wanted in here. And, you know, and it's a great lesson in how the business works. Nothing yeah. is fair. Yeah. Nothing makes sense. You have to, you know, you have to enjoy if you sign up to be in this crazy world business of it all. There's no rhyme or reason, and you have to just kind of go follow the green lights. You know, if it wasn't your job to get, and you have to move on from that. And it's a hard lesson to learn, but you know, we all can, you know, be those bitter people at the end of the bar going, I coulda, shoulda, woulda been this mm-hmm. and that. And otherwise you go, or you just move on and do something else, you know?
Yeah. And I think, oh man, I'm going to draw this analogy, just hearing your response to that of like, cause that news I imagine was probably really hard in the moment.
Oh, but gosh, it was horrible. Yeah.
Your response, your bounce back, like you saw it as an opportunity. Like now I can do all these other things.
Right.
And it led to that in your career, which is, I mean, you know, there's one way you could have gone at the Groundlings. You're locked in there doing shows there, or look at all these other things I yes. can try.
Well, and you know, there was a good fantastic. Month that I was like, what well, have I done wrong? Because
yeah.
It was a year. I remember I was 28 years old and I had a lot of really cool things almost happen that year.
Yeah.
And all the big things that were going to, oh, put me on the map. And one of them was being a groundling. And I was like, I had that, you know, and when it didn't happen, you think, oh my God, I was so close. How did I fuck this up? I should have. And then you go, oh, I don't know what's in store for me. Mm. I can, you know, so I also tell people when you get any sort of bad news and about you put a lot of your life and energy in that place, you're allowed to be bitter and pissed, you know, for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
Then you have to work through it and find a way to like move through that. But it's totally fine and valid and fair. And I love now as a ex-Sunday Company people, I'll tell people like, you want to go out for drinks and vent? You can vent to me. You know, I get it.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, if you're still doing that 6 months, a year, 10 years later, babe, go to therapy and figure it out because it's just a place that made a decision that didn't go your way one time. You know, you yeah. have to move on and you have to also see the opportunity, like you're saying, that's in that because we think we know what's right for us and we don't know. We don't, you know, so yeah.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that's kind of what improv is all about too.
Exactly.
You get up, you fail. You get up, you go
exactly.
again, you try something else.
I think that's also so valid. It's like we so want to plan and it's like we miss the actual gold about what we signed up for, which is living in the present, which is the unknown and how in class we always say, you know, don't live in the past, don't live in the future. You know, the past is a little important. The past can help you a little bit, but it has to inform the now. The present is of infinite importance. The future is of zero importance. Mm. So if you're in a scene and you go, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Mom's going to come and our boss is going to come in. It's going to get really interesting. We know that that's a pitfall and it's boring to talk about, right? It's boring to live in that place in life. It's boring to think about when I get this thing, I'll get to move on. When I get this job or when I get this relationship to work or when I get this X, Y, and Z, then my life will be great. It's like, that's so boring. You have no way of knowing that. Mm. And in right now, all you're doing is thinking and stewing and worrying and stressing versus allowing yourself to be alive. And so it's a matter of being like, take what you learn in improv, be present, really listen and yes and versus thinking like, what do I have to do next? What's next? What's next? Or, oh God, I shouldn't have said that. Or yesterday was awful or today. You know, it's like now and it's scary, but it's wild and it's fun and it's why we're here.
Yeah. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was some very relevant advice. Not to me, but you know, to someone out there.
No, to someone else. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Not to me. I've already.
Oh, I don't take this advice. Sure. Oh, no.
Yeah,
I espouse it.
Yeah. But I hope someone at home found that helpful.
You know, sure. Yeah,
of course. Okay. Well, I know, right now we're coming up. You teach character classes at the Groundlings, right?
I do, yes.
Yeah. And I know, I mean, seeing a couple of your videos, the Chloe videos, talking about some of the plays you've done when you're playing nine characters. To me, I kind of see you as an expert on character.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. I found characters or when I was able to actually do improv well, because I wasn't limited to my own experience. And I could really just, it opened up a world for me when I can play somebody that's not me. And then I really had to kind of come back to, like, when I started doing solo shows, my first three solo shows I did were me just as Drew with stories that I've had and whatever. And it was terrifying to get on stage and be myself and be vulnerable and to go 5-10 minutes without a laugh and without an expectation for one and be like, oh wow, just be alive and be in the moment right now. But I will say, still, when I get to do improv and I get to play characters, there's a strength in that. I don't worry about being polite. I don't worry about saying the right thing. I don't worry about being smart or clever or anything. I'm just this person, and this person's just going to say and do whatever he or she's going to say or do. And it is really freeing for me in that way. Mm-hmm. And I'm also fascinated by people. I love just watching people and like human behavior, and, you know, it's really great. I always enjoy, I encourage people to be alone, because you really find, you know, when you're out, like, go take yourself out to eat and just sort of like put your phone away and just sort of watch people. You do look like a complete psychopath now when you're sitting by yourself without a phone,
which is crazy.
You know, and people are like, what is that person? What is that weird man doing over there watching people? Oh no. Yeah. But you really do get a great sense, you know, except jury duty, you know, go in and like all those people, you know, just like go to your jury summons and just like watch people and be like, what is it like to be that person? You know? And that's just what I encourage people to do. And also I encourage people to like tap into, like I think I was saying earlier, like who pisses you off, who annoys you, because that is your take on the world. Like someone who bends over backwards to be a people pleaser, does that drive you crazy? Then play somebody like that. So it's just, sometimes it's just like getting people to kind of, it helps you sort of explore, not necessarily like, I think it's dangerous to say, what do you think is funny? And because I think that where people get into ideas and they go, well, I think this thing is, you know, it's trickier, I think, versus like, who inspires you when you go through the world? Who is that person that, you know, the neighbor that you have to hear every time? If you live in an apartment, you always have to hear this person, and what are they talking about, and what is their life and them walking through the world? And, you know, and that's just what makes, I think, acting and writing so fun, is just sort of like, you get to sort of dip in and to a whole different energy, you know?
Yeah. When I teach the sketch class here at IITP.
Oh, great. Oh,
that's
great.
One of our first assignments is I just send folks out. I'm like, go to a public place, observe, even if it's just 30 minutes.
Yes, right? That's awesome.
Because you're going to find something. If it's a tick, you know, an attitude, a behavior, whatever you see.
Absolutely.
It's like such a great place to start.
Well, and that's the thing, like, you know, you don't have to follow people. I tell people, I'm like, don't follow people around. Like, it's super creepy. Also just be inspired by one thing you see from people. Because
something small.
Because the person is a three-dimensional human being. They contain multitudes. Sometimes the more you study them, the more complicated it gets. But what is one thing about them, or that one thing you overhear? You know, I remember years ago walking by and I overheard a woman go, "It's okay, I'm used to it." And I was like, ew, what if that just like clouded everything?
Yeah.
You're just a walking doormat. Yeah. I'm used to it. Terrible things always happen to me. And I'm like, maybe this person is not living in that, hopefully not living in that space all the time.
Not.
But you get to play a character who is in that sort of Ziggy Eeyore place of just like, oh, I know the world's awful and it's my fault, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's so fun to sort of be like, what if that just was the veil that you wore over everything? Oh, you saw the world through that.
Yeah. And where do we see this person? What are they experiencing?
Absolutely.
What bad news
exactly.
Is coming their way?
Right. Or even when they get good news, how are they going to react to it in that way of like, well, it won't be for long, you know, or whatever, you know? Yeah.
It's your birthday.
Yeah. Oh, not tomorrow.
Again.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Every year. I want to see that. See?
Exactly.
Write it, Drew. Write it.
Exactly. Done.
Yeah. So thinking about, I know you're not just an improviser. I mean, we've talked about your writing a little bit. You're also an actor. So I'm curious, how do you think improv kind of influences, I guess, your other pursuits?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny. I don't often improvise a lot. When I'm a lot of times, the kind of roles and the things, and doing a lot of comedy, a lot of times they'll go, or just say whatever.
Yeah.
And, or they'll go, oh, we can keep going. You can keep improvising after. And sometimes it's really useful, but other times I'd rather just do the script because I feel like I hate watching things and I see where the script ends and the improv takes over. And sometimes it's a little bit like, and other times I'd want to be like, I don't want to write your script for you. I'm going to do what you wrote. But what it really helped me with was listening, like as an actor. So it's not about just like saying something clever or saying something funny, but really helped me be a hyper listener and react based on how you just said or just did something versus how I thought ahead of time. And I used to think acting was a lot more boring in the sense that you would just read your stuff and you would plan out how you were going to say every line. And you had it all kind of ready to go. And you just walk into a space and just like dump out the bottle that you've prepared. And it's like, no, it's like really like you kind of have to like learn your lines. And then I don't know how this is going to go. It's based on how you're going to say it. And ideally, I'm going to change based on how you're talking. And so it helped with that a lot.
Yeah.
It also helped me a lot in just in life with listening and in social situations and just sort of yes-anding people at parties. Cause I used to be like, I don't know what to talk about. I have anxiety. Yeah. And I'm like, just listen to what they said and yes-and them. People will find you. People will love you if you yes-and them because you're making it all about them. And they're going to talk about something. And you just go yes-and. And they're like, wow, Michael was such a fascinating person. And you're like, all I was doing was just yes-anding you. And it just keeps the conversation going. And I don't need to talk about myself all the time or what I wanted to talk about here. But it definitely helped with all of that, stuff for sure. And then just with writing for sure. I sort of, again, I think about when I write characters, it's sort of in that space of just, I sort of just let myself sort of just improvise as them and like, think how would they say that? And sometimes I'll write as fast as I can. Like I like to handwrite sometimes without letting myself scribble through things.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll do it on the laptop and just not hit delete and just kind of like write. And then the next day go back and read it and edit. But just be like, what if I'm just spewing as this person without thinking too hard and trying to think about like what would be funny or interesting. Sometimes just like, just let your person vomit.
No filters.
And right.
Put it
right
on the page.
And then you can go back in and edit later. So yeah.
I like that. And I think definitely your approach with acting. I think that's a common misconception people have. You memorize it. This is how you're going to say those lines every time.
Yes.
I did an acting program in college. I think I used to think that, you know,
yes,
it's like I have my beats for the scene.
Right. Because they kind of train you that way to like write it all out and you beat out your script and you kind of go, you know,
you
to engage, to,
what is your objective?
To like, circumnavigate, or I don't remember whatever the actions were all like to jostle
to
or
blank.
Whatever.
Yeah. Those
to, whatever to the actions. And I remember that. And I'm also like, that's helpful.
Yeah.
And I remember doing that for class, but you just don't always know sometimes. And also, you know, it cuts off a lot of opportunities too. Yeah. And there's sometimes too. And I think too, I remember reading an interview or seeing an interview with Meryl Streep and she was like, I don't do any of that. I know her. Yeah. I'll show you a couple of things of her. She's pretty good. But she was just like, I just learn my lines and I show up ready to play. And that's all. I wish I had more interesting things to say. Yeah. And it's like, and it is different for everybody. Some people really need to do that work ahead of time. They really need to feel like they're prepared. But I feel like being prepared, a lot of it is, you know, getting as much sleep as you can the night before, eating well, that's also part of it. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it is. And also just kind of being like, being ready to play is also kind of being prepared. And I do, actors who are scared of improv, it makes me sad because I want to just like open them up to it and go, you may not be doing improv for a career or for like ever in front of an audience, but you could take a class and learn. And it just opens you up. And the fear of it is so much greater, but still what I try to say to people, and it's true, on my way driving to an improv show, 10 minutes for an improv show, I'm always nervous. There's always part of me that's like, ah. And then when you're out there doing it, it's really fun. And when it sucks, it really sucks. And it's, and you're watching yourself and you're judging and it's awful. But you just have to dust yourself off and do it again. But ultimately, the fear of it is so much greater than the actual doing of it. Oh, and yeah. Even when it's not a great night and you realize that, like, oh, everybody goes through that and everybody sort of feels that way and it's not as bad as you think it is. You're never as bad as you think you are or as good as you think you are ever. I think sometimes there's also that. Because I've also felt amazing and I've watched mm-hmm. tape back and I was like, oh, it was all right. I don't think I was the best, yeah. You know, but felt great. But don't ever watch it. Don't ever analyze it. Just take that feeling. But I think a lot of it is like, it is at the core. I think, you know, cave people were improvising before they were doing scripted material. So mm-hmm. at the core of all performance is improvising. At the core of all art, all music, all anything creative is improv. Improv is the beginning of it all. And so if you just tap into that on any level, you're in a really lovely creative place. And it doesn't all necessarily have to go to comedy or to a result. It's just interesting sort of, it's like living in that sort of the unknown and living in the gray area is beautiful and exciting. And what makes things interesting, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh man, improv is the beginning.
Yes. The beginning of it all.
We got to put that on the wall.
Yes, I love it. Yeah.
And I think going back to what you said about kind of like showing up, like from an actor's perspective, right? You're showing up on set, ready to play. Like you said, get a good night of sleep. Eat good, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's like you're going to play a basketball game.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
And you trust. Eat a giant burrito before that? No.
No. Like, just trust that we're like there to play. And also mm-hmm. like, you know, sometimes mistakes are gold. Your mistake is all the time people will say, you know, it's so in class, somebody will say something, go, I mean, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, your I mean is so much more rational and logical and boring compared to that wild, crazy shit that you just said. One of my favorite examples that I love is in a movie and is in one of the greatest movies, I do think one of the greatest movies of all time, and that's Boogie Nights. In Boogie Nights, William H. Macy, have you seen this? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay, so in the movie, he's like a cuckold. His wife, Nina Hartley, is openly having sex with guys in front and just humiliating him. And he has a moment where he loses it and he goes up to Burt Reynolds and he's losing his mind. And he goes up and he says, I can do this. I can do that. My wife has an ass in her cock. And he says something else. So he clearly meant to switch those. And he said, my wife has an ass in her cock. And it's amazing. Because he's so upset that that's what that guy would say in the moment.
It's real.
And I've read about it and it's like, he flubbed the line. Obviously that's not rewritten, but Paul Thomas Anderson was wise enough not to change it and not to take another take. And I'm sure William H. Macy was like, fuck, after that take, like, yeah, I got my line wrong. Yeah. And Paul Thomas Anderson in his wisdom was like, that's how that man would be so flustered. He would say that. He would not be witty. He would not make sense. He's that upset and it's gold. And so that's an example where it's like really awesome art. It trusts the mistake. Mm. And that's why improv is so beautiful. Cause it's like, even when he didn't improvise that, he messed up, quote unquote. And yet I think about that moment. I remember when I saw it and the first time I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, thank you. Don't fix that. Don't change that. It's, imperfections are gold.
The mistake is more true to life than anything else would have been.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't have remembered that line had he said it the way it was written. It's like, okay, whatever, moving on. It's to me, like, it's just, it's beautiful. Yeah. Oh man. Can you call this episode Ass in Her Cock?
I'll work on it. We'll redo the whole intro with no context.
That's
folks,
it.
Folks will be like, what is this?
What
one
is
about?
That? Oh, you'll get a lot of clicks for the wrong reasons. And people will be really disappointed for what they'll be like. Is it an improv podcast?
Think of the numbers, Drew.
Think of the numbers. Finally, we're a hit.
It's clickbait, right? That's all that matters, right? Yes, just get a title, get them hooked, get them in the door. People might be confused and disappointed, but they're here.
I've done it to people before. Yeah. So
an angry audience is still an audience.
They still paid.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it's free, but
okay.
Maybe we should start charging.
Paywall. Yeah, there you go.
Got it. Yeah. All right. I got maybe one or two more questions for you. Then we're going to try and do some improv.
Wonderful.
So thinking about your experience kind of transitioning from improv student performer to teacher, what do you think are some of the differences in being an improv student and being an improv teacher?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say ultimately being a teacher has made me a better improviser. Mm. In the beginning, it made me a way worse improviser because I was watching myself way too much when I started teaching. Because I was teaching the rules and then I was getting on stage being like, oh, I've got to get back to the rule. I have students here. I got to play by the rules. And I was very tentative. And but ultimately, yes, it made me a much better observer. What I love about teaching is that our classes are 3.5 hours long and I don't have to think about myself. I can focus on them. When I really learned, I feel like I used to teach more from a place of, I would have done this. You could have done that. And it's like, no, that's absolutely not helpful. Mm. And when I realized it could be more about, it's all about, not more about, 100% about you, the student, and what you said and what you did and what your partner said and did, how do I make that work? And then it takes a lot of pressure off of what I, Drew, would have done in a scene. Who cares? I'm not up there. The two of you or three of you are, and I can actually focus on you and say, how do we make that work better? And I feel like, you know, I feel like I learn as a teacher. Like I tell classes, I'm like, I learn from you because we do this, a lot of the same exercises over and over again, but they're new every time. You know, I've seen a lot of variations on, you know, an angry mom or a really meek boss or whatever, but not yours. And so I learn a lot from that way as well. So I try to ask as many questions as I give answers. You know, I think that's what makes it fun to sort of go, wait, tell me more about that. And what inspired you to do this character? And wait, you said this here. What was that choice? And so sometimes it's hard, we know, when you're trying to get through as many people and try to give as many notes as you can. Yeah. But, you know, I like that part of it. And I think I try to take the mystique out of it because I also, like I was saying, like I was such a fan. And my teachers just like hung the moon. Mm-hmm. And so that's sweet when students like have that vibe. But I'm also like, we're people too. We're fallible. We don't know. We're just trying to help you get through this. And so that, you know, I think when I was a student, I just was like, oh, these teachers are all like, what do they do? You know, and now I sort of am like, oh shit, I'm one of them now. I don't know. That's so wild, you know? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, I went through the program when I was really young. I did a lot of classes then. And I hope I'm wiser now and more like willing to just fail and just play a little bit more. I was so nervous about doing the right thing, you know, as a student that it made it harder.
Yeah.
Going through it. I had to learn to like, oh, mess up. That's a good thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even that, like the ability to show that you can mess up rather than being nervous to.
I know.
The teacher can see that.
It bothers me so much when you know, you give notes and students are like, I'm sorry, why did I do that? And they get so mad at themselves. And it's like, oh my God, please don't say, I'm sorry. We're in class. My job is to give you notes. I could just take your money and go, you're great. Have a seat.
Nice job.
And a lot of places do that. And I don't respect those places that do that. And I think it's also like, my goal is certainly not to rip you apart and devastate you and make you feel awful.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like, oh, I want to challenge you and, you know, but you are here to learn. And it makes me sad if you feel like you failed in some way because you failed. You know, I know that sounds so weird, but like I try to say, you know, on the first day, fail big. I want you to fail big. Mm-hmm. And some people are like, oh God, that's terrifying to me. I'm like, great. The more you fail, the less you'll be afraid of it because God's finger doesn't come out of the sky and smite you. You know what I mean? You know, you just, you're like, so what? And move on, you know? Yeah.
Simple as that. Simple as that. All right. So thinking about improv, and you may have touched on this already. Maybe this is redundant, but just think about what do you think has been the impact of improv on your life?
Mm. It's absolutely changed my life. It's definitely helped me see things from other people's points of view. And so when I have difference of opinion, I don't have to just think only from me, me, me. I met the greatest people. I feel really lucky to have moved to LA right after college. And everyone's like, oh my God, everyone is so fake in LA, or everyone's so awful. And you will find that here, and you'll find that anywhere. But I met such like-minded, weird nerds in improv classes that I was like, oh, this is, you know, I'm also a theater person. And I love doing a lot of theater, and I love musical theater people. I'm amazed at their talent. I just did a musical and I got to do that. I'm not a singer. And so we're very different species, improv and musical theater people. And so I always liked that, but I never quite fit in with the musical theater people. I always felt like they were still a little bit more of the popular kids, the cool kids in that way. And they just had these talents that blew me away. And as an improviser, you're a weirdo. You're an outlier. And I think now kids have outlets, and they do. We were just walking by a teen improv class, whatever. Or in LA, sure, that has always existed. But I think finding my people in my 20s changed my life. I know it did. And I met people who were out here trying to just make things work and struggling. And I met just amazing creators and friends and people that I'll know the rest of my life. And I felt so supported here. I met such a network of people that I think if I was out here just trying to be an actor, just like walking through the streets, like with my headshots, like, I don't know where I would have begun. Yeah. I don't know what I would have done. So I'm very grateful.
Yeah. I think some of the folks you meet in improv are, you know, they're going to stay there for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's also like there's something about it that it's almost like, oh, we've been naked together. Like we, you know what I mean? Like we've been really vulnerable in this space together in a way that you don't always get with somebody that you're like, oh yeah, we did a play, but we were never hung out after or whatever. I think you just, you know, there's also the culture of like, you go out after the shows and you warm up together before, and you actually have like camaraderie, and, you know, friends of mine that do stand up are like, oh yeah, I was on the lineup. I kind of know that person, but we were hanging out in the green room together before. But do I know that person? I don't know, you know, because you're out there alone.
Yeah.
Improv, you're like, oh no, we really kind of have to trust each other.
Live and die together.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Stand up, it's so isolating. And you're not interested in anyone else while you're there.
No.
You're waiting to go up, you're like, I have my thing.
That's
I'm doing
the thing,
my
too,
thing.
That everyone talks about how brutal it is like to do open mics. And I'm like, I'm sure it is, because the people out there in the audience are truly just thinking about what they're going to say and do.
Yeah, they're up next or whatever.
And they're not paying attention to you.
No.
And so, yeah. And you're out there by yourself kind of doing your thing. Mm-hmm. And then when you're done, you just want to leave.
Yeah.
And yeah. Anyway. Glad we don't do that. I love it. I love watching it, but it terrifies me.
Oh yeah. It's tough. I've only done it a few times, but I like improv more.
Yeah.
I prefer it. All right. Last question for you, Drew.
Yeah.
So thinking about, you know, it's still 2024 is still young. You know, it's early. It's March, mid to late March. Looking ahead, and you know, we talked about your play, you have a reading coming up, Messy White Gaze, right?
Yes.
Are there some things like, either personally in your career that you're working on, just improv things you're like, hey, this year I want to do this. Not necessarily goals, but, you know, things.
As an improviser, I'm trying to be more of, I'm trying to be more helpful and less of a pig, because I know how to get on stage and just take over and be a crazy character. And I'm trying to be like, so that's a goal on an artistic level. I always say, Roy Jenkins at the Groundlings is a master at taking whatever weird information you say and making it make sense and making it gold. And he's truly an amazing improviser for that, you know, for many reasons. And he is hilarious, and he will literally make anything work. And I watch Roy and I go, oh, I want to be more like him, because like, I love that he's such a team player in that way and has no ego about it. Like, is willing to make it all about whatever your character is about. And he will play like connecting characters just to make your character more interesting or more. And I'm like, that's actually a good improviser. So yeah, there's that. And then I don't know. I mean, I'm glad we were still in fear of another strike that I hope IATSE gets everything they want. I'm in full support of IATSE, as we all are. So I'm just looking forward to hopefully more work hopefully coming and happening, because it's been quiet. But in the meantime, I'm in a real theater space right now. I was just doing a play in New York, and I've got my own play that I'm trying to make develop. I did a reading of another one that I was just telling you about before we started. And so like, I've got a lot of theater happening right now. I'm doing a play in June. I don't know if we've announced it yet. But stay tuned. There'll be a play in June. Here in LA, I'm doing.
All right.
So yeah, I'm staying busy, you know, and I realize that makes me really happy. So
So like, your hands are in many things, which I think is exciting.
Yes.
Yeah. And theater stuff, always here for it.
Yes, always.
Always here for it. All right. You ready? You ready to do some improv?
Let's do it.
We got a couple games we're going to play.
All right.
Let's do this. Okay. So this first game, we're going to put your character skills to the test. And what we're going to do, this game is called Character Vending Machine. I don't know if it's a real game. I think I made it up. But
I love it.
We're just going to see how it goes. So essentially, I'm going to give you a short like prompt for a character.
Okay.
And you're just going to give me one line of that character, whatever you think that is. And we're just going to see, we're just going to do see how many we can do in like a minute.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, wow.
I don't know. It's a little crazy.
Yeah, let's do it. I love it.
All right. So let me get that set up. All right. So any question?
No.
All right. So let me pull up. This is an example prompt would be like a lord answering questions at a boxing press conference.
Oh, okay.
That would be an example. So you get a little bit.
Oh, okay. Wonderful.
But yeah, I'm going to give you a little bit.
Okay. Wonderful.
All right. And just give me one line, then we'll move to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Here we go. Your first prompt. Train driver becoming born again in a religion.
Lord Almighty, 1 Ephesians 6:12. We're about to hit Albany.
All right. A criminal telling their partner they want an open relationship.
Look, Clyde, I like your holes, but I've got other holes to fill. And I'm a criminal.
All right. Cyclops giving the morning weather report.
It looks here one way only. There's just a lot of wind coming this way. Oh, why are all my characters terrified?
I don't know. Okay, a leprechaun trying to figure out the meaning of life.
It's just a tisket and a tasket, my love. I'll just skip around the shamrock field and find your joy.
A puppeteer trying to sell chocolate.
It melted in my very warm puppet paw, but it's a one. It's full of rich. It's white and dark, swirled. I'm so sorry. Can you scrub this off my Elmo?
All right, we got time for one more.
Okay.
An architect giving a funeral eulogy.
It was all my fault.
Blackout.
Yay. Oh, no.
I've got so many questions on that last one, Drew. Oh man. That was great.
Thank you.
All right. So this next game we're going to play, less high speed than that one.
Right. Love it.
You're probably only going to need to be one character.
All right.
So keep it simple. From this one, this game is called From Page to Stage.
Okay.
You and I are going to be taking a scene from a famous best-selling fiction novel.
Great.
That's called The Daughter of a Scoundrel.
The Daughter of a Scoundrel?
Daughter of a Scoundrel by Harper McBride.
Okay. Is this real?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
Okay, great.
No, it could be, but I don't think it is. All right. So you and I, we're going to be taking a scene from Daughter of a Scoundrel, mm-hmm. and you know, we're going to be bringing it to the stage. We're going to act it out. Mm-hmm. Just a bit of a preview of the stage play of Daughter of a Scoundrel.
Okay.
And that's all we're going to get.
Okay, great.
I'll black us out when we're done. Mm-hmm.
So, Dad, they only gave me 5 minutes. The guard's really frustrating today. But I brought you your favorite. I brought you your favorite whistle.
Aye, me daughter. Thank you for bringing me whistle. You know, being stuck on land, it makes me miss the sea.
Yeah. Well, Dad, it's rough. You're stuck in a cell. It's really rough. But Please don't let the guards see the whistle. I don't think I'm supposed to give that to you.
Hey, my sweet. I won't be doing that.
You're yelling, Dad. You're drawing a lot of attention to us. And I'm really nervous. The other inmates are making fun of me because of my sundress. It's really thin.
I apologize. You're Sarah.
Yes, I'm Sarah. That's my name. You named me.
You know I've many daughters from my time
at
sea.
I know, but I don't speak to Angela. I don't speak to Heather. I don't speak to Heather B. I don't speak to any of them.
And I appreciate that. You're my favorite daughter.
Thank you.
I'm trying not to yell.
Thank you.
I just...
Much more pleasant.
Passionate.
Yes.
But, Sarah, that dress, that was a bit risky.
It's very thin. It's very, very thin. It's a translucent material. The designer told me it doesn't look like I have anything on, and I feel free when I wear it.
Is this... You're spending all my galleons on fine silks and linens, aren't you?
Yes. Well, thank you for the galleons. I never need to work again.
I could have used those to pay my bail.
Oh, well, Dad, it's just so much easier now with you having did all the crimes that you did, all that insider trading.
You're right.
Everything that you did, and now I can just be free.
You're right, and...
It's 1954.
It is.
A woman shouldn't have opinions. Any sort of job or any sort of responsibility.
You're right, Sarah. I am glad that you're taken care of, and while I mm-hmm. rot away as a, now a landlubber, mm-hmm. I'm happy that you can live the life I never had. Mm. One free of work.
It's wonderful. I just wander the streets in my clear attire and just take whatever happens to me.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And I love it.
You're the only kid of all my kids, Sarah, of many that I have, that you're the only one that comes to visit.
Oh, I know. I know. I know I come a lot.
Thank you.
The guard was like, you again.
I
don't really have anything else going on other than my late night adventures.
That's all right. I don't want you employed.
Thank you.
I don't want you.
And I have no prospects for marriage.
That's fine.
I'm a deep 42.
I never got married, Sarah.
See? And you're doing, I mean, well.
Well.
Yeah.
Look, if there's one thing I hope to do as a father in all my crimes, it's to provide a better life for me kids than I ever had.
And you have. It's wonderful.
I have.
What's engraved on that whistle?
Oh,
I've always been too scared to ask, and you know I can't read.
That's all right, sir. You don't need reading. You've got galleons.
Thank you, my galleons.
You're above reading.
I know.
And you know what? I can't.
Stop it. Stop looking at me. Would you tell that growling gentleman to stop looking at me and rubbing his paws together?
Oh, that's we just call him Dog. Dog.
Dog.
Dog, stop growling at me, daughter.
Oh, he listens to you. He respects you.
Oh, the good boy. He's a sweet lad.
It's Sarah.
We hang out in the yard.
Sarah, two H's. Thank you.
During my 2 hours of mandatory outdoor time.
Mm.
I hang out with Dog.
You have mandatory outdoor time.
We do.
Oh, that explains your very burnt skin.
Something about the vitamins from the sun.
Oh.
Of course.
2 hours is a lot.
Dad. I've got it. I've got quite leathery skin from
you
my time.
You should ask them for some cream.
Oh,
you need some skin cream. It's your skin is flailing off.
Sarah, it doesn't matter if I look like an old prune.
Oh.
It's all right.
I know. I'll be the pretty one.
Yes, for me. That's why you don't need reading.
Down, Dog.
Good.
Down. Oh.
Blackout. I think we're gonna sell out opening night.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah, the scoundrel's daughter.
The scoundrel's daughter. Well, it's great because we can have other scenes where she tries to find the mother.
Yeah.
We have Dog now that can come in, you know, and between you and
what's
father.
What's going on
and,
with Dog?
It's yeah.
Such a story there.
I don't know.
I don't know.
These poor illiterate people that make bad decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Illiterate folks. It's rough. Pirates. Pirates, dying breed. You know.
Yep.
There's not too many left.
I'm glad you said landlubber. That also made me really happy.
Oh, yeah. You know. Well, that's one of my favorite pirate pieces.
Landlubber.
Yeah. All right. Well, Drew, I think we got time for one more game.
Great.
It's going to be a quick one. This game is called Unlikely Press Conference.
Oh, fun.
And okay. You're going to be, you know, just kind of a regular Joe. But you're holding a press conference. You're a mailman. And okay. For some reason, you've called this press conference. We're going to find out why.
Okay.
And I'll be acting as the press. You'll play the mailman. And, okay. You know, we've got some questions for you.
Okay, great.
All right. And I'll black us out when we're done.
All right, great. All right, everyone, settle down, please. Please, please calm yourselves. This is a civilized family-based community meeting. As you all know, I am Floyd Pampers, and I am the... That's not Pampers. It's spelled the same way, but it's pronounced Pampers. And, you know, it's important to have our mail spelled correctly. We get to the wrong address. But anyway, I'm here to field some questions about what's been going on in the mail service lately. Yes, sir. Right here in front.
Yes. Floyd Mayweather from The Statesman.
Oh, we both have the same name. Hello, Floyd. Nice to meet a fellow Floyd.
Good to see you, Floyd. Your recent decision to pass policy to ban lick envelopes, very controversial. Can I ask, what was your rationale behind that decision?
Well, that does come from a personal situation. I have an incredibly wet tongue. Mm. And when I try to lick mail, it just slides out of my mouth. And it's just, it's something that I have a problem. Just the mail is just sopping wet when I try to use it. And I... You know, other people have much better ratio of saliva to dryness, but it's unfair for those of us that have overly produce. Also, I met a woman one time who cannot produce any moisture in her mouth. She's complete sand. Eating is painful for her. And imagine what it's like for her every time she wants to mail a letter or a bill or, you know, any sort of situation she has. So it's just better off. You know, just to sort of, you know, just to use staples. So you should keep a stapler next to your, you know, a very trusty device in 2024. Staple your mail and good luck.
Good luck. Wow. Oh.
Yes. Yes.
Barbara Boxer.
Hello.
It's Daily Chronicle.
Nice to meet you. Oh, okay. I thought you were
Daily Chronicle.
Famous Barbara Boxer.
What? Like,
famous. Yes.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
Oh, yes. She was very famous. Anyway.
Oh, I see. Yes. Mr. Floyd, can I call you that?
Please.
I'm wondering, what are some common mistakes you see around town in the mail that comes through? Mm. You see all.
Yes, yes. Well, a lot of mistakes. People write, they write in... there are all kinds of wild pens now. People, they love to collect. It seems like ink is coming in all kinds of wild colors. And some of the inks are incredibly illegible and are actually offensive to certain cultures. You know, you shouldn't write in fuchsia or you offend the entire Eastern Seaboard. So, you know, I just tell people, blue or black ink, please. And no pencil because it can rub off. You know, also people make mistakes. They leave their dogs out and dogs, they hate us. They hate the uniform. They hate the whole thing. So there's often lots of problems with animals, in those situations as well. Yes.
Follow-up question. Still Barbara Boxer.
Oh, hello, Barbara.
The Daily Chronicle.
Nice to see you again. Yes. 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 Oh, you changed jackets really quickly. I didn't recognize you.
you know, I like to keep things fresh.
Yes, go ahead.
Mr. Floyd, you mentioned dogs at the end of your last answer, and I've got to put it out there. I think the whole room is wondering. You've recently gone to war with the local dogs of the community.
I'm covered in bites, and I really didn't want to talk about this, but I brought it up. You're right. Correct. I stand corrected. Yeah. I'm riddled. I've lost every battle with every mongrel that I have entered. They attack me. They hate me. I've never met a dog that enjoys my presence. And so they also communicate amongst themselves. And they let them know, like, oh, Floyd Pimpers is coming. So they retaliate. I'll be out of my uniform just walking down the street. And when I see a dog even across the way, it knows to hunt me. And it's been really rough. I'm sorry. What was your question?
I just wanted to know more about the war on dogs. But
it's really a war between me. The dogs have a war on me, for sure. And that's why I have noticeable cartoon-like bite marks out of all of my limbs.
And what's your plan to counteract against the dogs?
Just a salve.
Blackout. There it is.
I had to say Sam.
There it is. It all came back. All right, Drew, thank you so much for playing.
Oh my God, Michael, that was so much fun.
Before we close out tonight's episode, any last words you want to leave us with?
I don't think so. Just, I don't know. Improv is the beginning. Did I say that? I don't know. That sounds
improv is the beginning. Improv is the beginning.
And, my wife's got a cock in her ass. I don't know. That's it. That's all I wasn't planning on talking about that, but. Hey, the joy.
Improv is the beginning.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you so much to Drew Droege for coming on Improv for the podcast. As always, you can find us anywhere. There's podcasts, even YouTube. And with that, we'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, we'll see you next time. Improv for the podcast was created by Matt Moore and Michael Lee Evans. Edited and produced by Michael Lee Evans. And finally, presented by Improv for the People. Interested in more IFTP? You can visit us at improvforthepeople.com or on our socials, such as Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube. Remember, new episodes are released weekly. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.